Welcome to Hungry Authors, the show for aspiring authors who will stop at nothing to accomplish their writing and publishing dreams.
We're your hosts, Liz and Ariel, and we're honored that you're here. Let's dive in.
Hey, Emily, thank you so much for being here. We are so excited to have you on today.
Well, I'm thrilled to be here with you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about How to Walk Into a Room. And what I'm really curious about is, you know, this whole book is framed around a metaphor. And I got it immediately when I saw, you know, when you made the announcement about the book and I read a little bit, I was like, oh my gosh, that is so brilliant. I love the metaphor, but it is kind of an unusual like construct for a book. So can you tell us a little bit about like, how did this idea come to you? How did the metaphor come to you? And what has the reception been like for you?
I think the metaphor itself, just to set it up a little bit, is the idea is if life were like a house, then every room in some ways represents all of our different commitments, relationships, and various things that make our lives our lives. And we often know right when we walk into a room, whether that's a physical room or just a metaphorical, when we walk into a group of people or a commitment or something, we often know immediately, like, this is, I belong here. This is my space. Some of us were born into a space, a church, a family, and we're like, yes, this is my place. And then there are those other rooms of life, if you will, where we walk in and we're like, that's not for me. We don't even say yes to those. But then there really, the book is kind of the conversation that I was interested in having is, what do we do when those spaces that were once exactly right for us become a space where we start to question? And in my many years of now hosting conversations about decision-making and discernment, most especially on the podcast, The Next Right Thing, also in the book, The Next Right Thing, and also as a spiritual director, I find that that's really the question a lot of us carry a lot of times when it comes to the decisions that give us the most trouble. It's the ones where we are questioning, is it time for me to dig in my heels and stay in this space? Or is it time for me to move on? And how can I know? And here's the kicker, for sure. And I feel like a lot of us, like, we just want a framework. We want advice. We want to know. And so that's the conversation I was interested in having was, how do we know when it's time to stay and when it's time to walk away? And using the metaphor of a house, there are some rooms that are for us. There are some rooms that aren't for us. What do we do when a room where we once belong isn't a room where we belong anymore?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So do you find that a lot of people get it? Like, I think it's brilliant. And obviously it's done really well. You hit the New York Times bestseller list, which is incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, what has been kind of the reception to that?
You know, most people get it. I have had very few people say, like, I haven't had anyone say they don't get the metaphor. I have had a few people say, or a little bit of feedback where they're like, they didn't like the metaphor, or it was too much room talk. And like, they didn't resonate with that. Like, they don't see life that way. They don't see, you know, they couldn't fit their own experience into that framework. And that's valid. Like, that's such a, when you play with metaphor, a lot of times there are just, when you set it all up that way, it's going to be difficult for someone to escape, like to pull what they need. It's sort of like trying to eat ice cream around ketchup or whatever. It's like, I just don't want this. You know, this isn't going to be my thing. But I would say That's the minority of the feedback. And listen, I have over the years grown in my ability to receive feedback as a writer, because we all know, like, I know what I wrote, but I don't know what I said until, you know, someone else reads it. And so that's something that I have been, when I receive this feedback, I'm like, okay, like, so they don't get the metaphor. How is that possible? Or they don't like the metaphor, but I appreciate it. Cause listen, all books are not for all people. Your grandmother and Lady Gaga don't read the same books. So thank you for that. That's a little comparison no one will ever forget.
Yeah, exactly.
You might have noticed that Hungry Authors has had a bit of a glow up lately. One of the best investments we've made has been in hiring Goldschlag Design to help us create attractive graphics, slides, invites to our book launch party, and digital products that are aligned with the Hungry Authors brand. Michelle Goldschlag founded Goldschlag Design specifically to help busy women juggling marriage, children, and entrepreneurship. She has helped us take so much off of our plate. If you're looking for help with your design needs, there are three ways to work with Michelle. First, you can hire Michelle as your personal coach to develop and refine your digital design work in-house. You can submit one-off projects with a quick turnaround, or you could get unlimited designs every month with her subscription program. We're part of her subscription program, and the value that we've received has been incredible. But space is limited. Hop on over to goldschlagdesign.com today to snag your spot alongside us.
I'm curious, did you debate at all? Because so much of what I hear around titling, and especially in subtitling, has to do with clear beats clever, SEO, you know, that sort of a thing. And so I'm always wondering, like, a title like yours that it's not that it's not clear, but it is clever. You know, it's a metaphor. It's the kind of thing that doesn't say like, I'm going to teach you this, you know, like right in the title, but it does like pique people's like curiosity a little bit. Like sometimes I think about like Rachel Hollis, like Girl Wash Your Face, that came up, went on to be this like mega bestseller. And I'm like, well, that's not especially clear, but like it worked. Like, I don't know. I'm just curious. Did you think through that at all? Or was it just immediately clear to you, like what you wanted to call it? Yeah.
Well, lucky for me, it wasn't just up to me. I did pitch the book as How to Walk Into a Room to the publisher, but then once it gets into their hands, they can either take it or leave it. They decided to take it. And I actually, here's a bit of advice. If you were writing a book proposal and you want to pitch it around to traditional publishers, do not give a working title to your proposal that you're not willing to keep forever. Because a lot of times we're like, well, I'll just title it something and it'll change later. It might. And a lot of times authors like do the opposite. They're like, I love this title and I want to keep it forever. And then it's going to be changed. What I have found sometimes also happens is you title it like a for now title. And then the publisher really likes that. And you're like, oh, wait, I thought we were going to talk about it. We were going to do something different. And they're like, no, we love this. I wouldn't say that's necessarily what happened with this one, but maybe a little bit. Because I was like, it's good, not great with this title. I was like, it tells, and here's the thing is because the subtitle is The Art of Knowing When to Stay and When to Walk Away. So the subtitle does a lot of work for this title. Originally, the title that was pitched that went to sales conference, that then once sales conference happens, if you don't know the insider business, it's that once the publisher does their sales conference, this is usually about 8 months-ish before the book comes out. Is that right? Like mine went to conference the beginning of summer and it released in April or in March. So that's the timeline. As soon as it goes out there to the sales reps, it shows up on Amazon, all the like bookshop, all the places with whatever title it has at the time. Done or not done. This one was not done. And so it went up. It was not covered yet, but the title was there. And the title was How to Walk Into a Room, parentheses, and How to Know When to Walk Out. How to Know When It's Time, How to Know When to Walk Into a Room, something like that. And then How to Know When It's Time to Walk Out. It was very long. Colon, it's like a Saturday Night Live title. Discernment for Your Next Right Thing. And that was the title that was like, and I was like, this is not, we haven't even had a conversation really about the title yet. It ended up changing, shortened, got a better subtitle. But my point is, yes, there was a lot of conversation about it. I pitched an alternate title that I unfortunately fell in love with and no one else liked. Do you want to know what it was?
Yes, of course.
Are you ready? It was Read the Room. Mm-hmm. And partly I liked it because the discernment, to me, that was like, it was a different title. It was a different concept of reading the room, but the idea was like, that's what discernment is. We're reading the rooms of our life to discern if it's time to go or stay. But the feedback that I got, and I actually think is fair feedback, was when we usually hear that phrase, it's usually said sarcastically or negatively, like read the room, you know? And so that might not translate. And they just felt like How to Walk Into a Room was kind of better. And I think they were, in the end, I think they were right. Although I did think it was a little quippier. It was shorter. Read the Room.
I can see both perspectives on that. I get where they're coming from. I also get where you're coming from. But I do. And isn't it funny how the way that you frame a title has such a big impact on how you write the book, right? Because you did such an incredible job throughout the entire book of really maintaining consistency with that metaphor and really working it in. And if the title had been different, like you would have had to change a lot of the content itself to be updated with that. So I think that's so fascinating how, and really, I mean, that is a really skillful thing for authors to do. You can't just slap a title on a book. It has to be integrated with the content. It has to really make sense. It has to all feel cohesive, you know? Yeah. So you also shared some really vulnerable moments in this book. And I also heard you and your husband, John, talking about it on your podcast about how that was a really hard thing. And you had to kind of, you know, talk about, do we want to do this? Do we want to open up those moments to the world? Do you mind sharing a little bit more about what has that been like for you, especially now that you've, you know, the book has been out for a little bit and you've had some distance and, you know, there's a little bit more time. What has that been like for you to share those moments with the world?
Well, it has been a real gift. And I'll tell you, you know, we 4 years or so ago, one of our kids came to us as a 16-ish year old telling us that they were questioning their sexuality. And at the time, it was somewhat surprising, somewhat not. But, you know, I never imagined at that time that I would end up writing about that in a book. That was not, you know, something that I thought would happen then. However, I did write some about it privately, just as a, because that's how I process my own world and everything. And so there were a lot of other things going on at that time, but that ended up being kind of the catalyst, you know, that conversation, those questions we were having, and those things that we wanted to support our kid through all of this, as well as our whole family, as well as our own souls, and all the questions we were having in our faith and in our relationships and all of those things. And so that sort of ended up being the catalyst for us deciding to leave the church that we were in and kind of find a new space. And that's, you know, I think that's a lot of people's story, maybe not specifically our story, but like there's a lot of adjacent stories in a lot of families. And as a writer, you know, once I knew I was going to write this book, How to Walk Into a Room, I did not pitch it that I would share a lot of our personal story. That was not really part of the book proposal. However, once I started writing, I realized that there were a couple of stories in there that I thought, oh, this feels like it makes sense to share. And there's a story about some friends of ours who visited our church who were a same-sex couple. And it was a profoundly transformative story experience for me just as a person. It didn't have anything to do with our family, but I realized I might have to share that story in the book. And when I shared the reality that I wanted to share that story in the book and also asked permission of the other people who were involved and was granted it so graciously, that was when, you know, our child told me, like, they were like, you have to share our story. Like, I think you should share our story too. So it wasn't really even my idea, which I don't think it ever would have been, but because it came from them, it felt like, okay, this maybe I need to hold this and consider it. And, you know, I shared it pretty vaguely. It wasn't a lot of detail, but as a writer, I think that's something we have to consider is always first and foremost and forever, what's mine to tell. And what is a way to do this if it is partly mine to tell? And if I do have the right permissions and support, how can I, what to share and what not to share? Because there's, man, that, you know the whole story you lived, and then you know the story that just needs to be shared so that other people, you know, specificity is where people relate to their own, like the more specific we are, the more broadly it connects to people, which is so bonkers bananas to me, but it's true. Now that we're on the other side of it, and I will say, just to answer your question, there were a lot of questions about, you know, I come from way back when growing up, a fairly conservative faith background. Over the years, maybe not quite as conservative. We'll talk about that at a different time. But my point is, there was some question marks about how our own story, no matter where someone might land theologically on the particulars of our story, how it would be received. And I'm here to tell you now, several months after the release of the book, it has been received with real kindness and welcome. I think I've heard from a lot of people who were glad that we were willing to share our story. And I have really gotten very little, nothing has happened to make me regret sharing. It's really only been connection and gratitude and grace, honestly.
That's wonderful.
Hey friends, it's that time again. If you've been wanting to learn about our bespoke book mapping process that has helped hundreds of authors plan and write the book of their dreams, we have good news. Registration is now open for our next Map Your Book cohort, which runs July 9th through August 6th. In 5 teaching sessions and weekly workshops, we'll help you figure out your book's transformation and teach you how to map out your entire book chapter by chapter. Book mapping is the invisible matrix that makes a book work. We're going to teach you how to see it and how to do it for your own book. Head to mapyourbook.com to learn more and sign up for our July cohort.
Did you worry at all or think through about like what this would do to your quote brand, which I know is kind of like a loaded term and sometimes has negative connotations, but the way that like what you're maybe like publicly, no matter who you are privately or who you've become in your own growth, like publicly, there are probably assumptions about you because of, you know, your where your career started and different things you've talked about. Was it a consideration at all, like what this will do, to my quote brand, to my career? And like, how did you weigh that or think about it? Just for other people who might be thinking about, oh, I have something that I feel like I really want to share, but it feels like in some way it might be at odds of what my readers think of me, something, you know, along those lines.
I think it's a fair question. Mm-hmm. And for me, what it kind of came down to was, who would I rather marginalize? If someone's going to be upset or marginalized, who do I want it to be? And I'm here to tell you, I didn't want it to be my kid. And so in the end, I wanted to write a story. I wanted to write a book that my kids would be proud of, that they would be proud to share with their friends and neighbors, that they would be able to read without having to skip anything. And for me, when it comes to, you know, I remember Holly Girth once said, a brand is a promise that you'll be the same no matter where someone finds you. And I refuse to create things, make things, write things that are not in alignment with who I most deeply am. That does not mean that I'm going to share everything in my life or, you know, that, you know, there is a difference between, you know, vulnerability and intimacy. We've learned that from Brené Brown. But really, ultimately, it came down to, what does it mean to write a book my kids are proud to read? And if I do that, then I have succeeded come what may.
I love that so much. And I remember on that podcast episode with your husband, you said that there were kind of two questions you asked yourselves before writing this book, or maybe when writing it, but you asked, who benefits if you don't share this? Meaning like, who are you protecting with your silence if you don't say anything? And then who benefits if you do? And I was so struck by those questions. They really stuck with me as, you know, as I consider my own journey. I've thought of a lot about like, well, you know, I have this brand where I teach writers and I have, you know, all this publishing stuff that I do, but then also like I have my personal life where I'm a foster mom and I'm going through, you know, all these things. And I've really struggled with like, how much of that do I share with the world? And when I heard those questions, I was like, I think I need to share more because that's who I am. And that's such a big part of it. And it does tie in with my work. So I just, yeah, there was so much of your story and your courage in sharing all of that has been really motivating for me personally. And I know for many authors who consider the same things as well.
I love that line you said, and it does tie in with my work. Because I think as writers, sometimes, depending on the subject matter that we write about, we feel like we're being dishonest if we don't say all the things. You know, if there's some big part of our life behind the scenes that's really impacting our day-to-day living, which is so much of our lives. And then if we don't share it or write about it, we can feel duplicitous or like we're not telling the truth. And I just want to like debunk that. Like, you writer, you can keep anything to yourself for as long as you want. Like, that is your story to tell or not tell. And I think part of becoming pro as a writer is building and learning that discernment between what is for me, what is for my reader, because ultimately it really is about serving a reader. You're not just writing something, you're not writing about something, you're writing for someone. And so it was only when I discerned that the things that I was experiencing in my life were were coming to a crossroads with the work I was doing in the world that I felt uniquely called to do, that's where I discerned, okay, this part, not everything, but this part I want to share. And I have the right support and the right permissions and the right perspective to do that. But I didn't do it before then. You know, there were many years that passed before then. And I also think it would have been okay if I hadn't. I don't think that would have been wrong, or I would have been, you know, being a liar. It's just, it's a choice, and there are, you know, pros and cons to all the choices. But I think at the end of the day, I don't love that phrase, at the end of the day. But here we are. I'm glad I shared that story, but I think we all have to develop that. It's like back in the early days of blogging, the big question at blogging conferences was, do you share about your kids on the internet, like the little ones, you know, the tiny children? And everybody had a different answer to that. Now, I think a lot of people who answered it one way may be questioning some of the choices that they made in the past. But you did what you knew at the time. And everyone had to discern for themselves what they were comfortable with. And I think the same goes for the stories we tell.
Yeah, that's so wise and very true. So has this book opened up any new rooms for you? I'm just curious, you know, any new metaphorical rooms that you find yourself in?
I think I find myself in a room of courage, more so than I was in before. A second room maybe is, this is the first book I wrote after I had been through some spiritual direction training. And so while I think I've done a lot of work before this book, you know, with a spiritual director posture, this book was written sort of coinciding with me in an apprenticeship for spiritual direction, as well as meeting one-on-one with directees. And I think that really informed the writing and my own experience of the writing. And I think hopefully as well, the reader's experience of the book. And so that's kind of it's not a new room necessarily, but it's a newer room if you look at my whole, you know, body of work. And it's one that I feel honored to be in, and also like myself in. You know, I often ask people, when is the last time you felt like yourself? And I think the process of writing this book is a time when I really did feel like myself. And I'll also say I was invited to be on the Today Show. That was a new room I'd never been in before. And I think without this book, I don't think that would have happened.
Yeah, literally. That's amazing. All right. So you know that we have a book coming out in August. We are kind of in the final weeks leading up to that. It's a little scary to think about. But as someone who kind of just went through all of this amazing, you know, press and publicity, you did a book tour for it. Obviously, we do not have ambitions to be on the Today Show, but do you have any?
We have the ambition.
Okay.
Do we have all the others?
Liz is out there buying her dress and getting ready.
She's getting ready.
That's a room. That room is for me.
Someday. Yeah.
Us. Anyway, but yes. Go ahead.
Well, do you have any advice for us as we kind of prepare to launch our book? Anything you would do differently, or any advice you would share?
Oh, book launching. It's funny. It's such a weird job to be an author. And it's such a privilege, right? But it's also crazy making. Especially when I don't know if you're working, are you working with a publisher, like a traditional publisher?
Yes.
So yep. It's also like you're the boss, but not really. Mm-hmm. And you're in the rooms, but not really. And so everyone kind of has their job. I found for me, the times in a book launch when I feel the best about things is when I take on the role as sort of the project manager. And don't wait for the publisher to tell me stuff, because they've got a lot of books going on. I've just got this one. And so knowing that really my job is to drive the ship, and the publisher comes in as a partner to support in whatever way they are able to. But I think a lot of times authors expect the publisher to kind of tell them what to do next. And by the time the publisher might do that, it's probably too late to do it. And so I think for me, being really clear about what success looks like, and that is things that we can control. Because, you know, saying like, well, I want to hit a bestseller list, that goal is great. But it's also like, well, how about instead, let's change it to, let's run a bestseller campaign. And whatever happens, happens. But we know that we did a few things that hopefully gave us our best shot at that. That's a better, like, sort of a mindset shift to where, what are the things that here's what success looks like for this particular book, which, by the way, will may be different than a book you've had before, a book you'll have again, or a book someone else has written. Especially, you know, you're writing a book about writing for writers. That's a niche group. And listen, they buy books, so that's good news. But that's a different type of conversation. And there are particular places where you're going to be really, really invited to have that conversation versus if you were to write a book about prayer or something, you know, more mainstream, then it would look different. So knowing, like, for this book, this is what success looks like. And for me, a couple things like that were, I wanted to be among the people. I wanted to see readers' faces with my face in a room. And we just, I mean, you said I went on book tour. Did I really? Really, it was, Emily looked at her calendar and saw some places where I was traveling to anyway. We were going to Columbus, Indiana for the eclipse. I was going to Kansas to teach a class I teach twice a year. I was going to be in Chattanooga for an event they were flying me in and my team in for. So those are places where we just added on a book stop. And it looked like a tour, but was it? Not really. It was just like a small town. It was like people were like, come to New York. And I'm like, we'll be in Indiana. We'll be in Chattanooga. It wasn't like this, you know, pre-planned. And by the way, that was not the publisher. That was just me and my little team deciding, like, I'm going there anyway. Let's add a book to stop. And it was really fun. And I'm glad I did it because one of my goals for this book was to be out among the people. That was not a goal with my last book. That's not something that I set a goal for. I just wanted it for this one. And I'm so glad that I did. So check, success, right? And so I think it's helpful to have some, like, big ones, you know, big kind of goals, like three big rocks that you really hope happen or that you're able to work towards. And then also some things that, like, you know, like, if I do it and put it on the calendar, it'll be done. And I don't have to, like, worry in the night about, you know, the success or failure of it.
Yeah, that's such good advice. Thank you so much for that. Well, Emily, we will be sure to put links in our show notes and everything. Is there anything, any last words or any final thoughts that you would want to share to our listeners?
I think when I'm talking with writers, it's always like, I love having conversations with writers about writing. I don't get to do it as much these days as I used to. But I think I would just say that, you know, there is a difference, as I'm sure your listeners know, between writing and publishing, that I think we're always invited to write. Write, write, write. Don't stop writing. Publishing, different beast. And some of the writing that we write will make a lot of sense to pursue publishing. But just know that writing is an art and publishing is a business. And I think the sooner we make peace with the reality of publishing as a business and work as hard as we can not to shake our fists at the sometimes maddening ways that the publishing machine works. Sometimes it's crazy making. I've mentioned that already. Sometimes it can be really slow and confusing. Sometimes we get mixed messages. Sometimes people, you know, who work at the publishing houses, they don't really know what's going on because they have a lot of other books they're doing. And so finding ways to recognize, like, that doesn't ruin the art for me, though. Like, writing is still the art that I can love and hold dear. Publishing is just, it's a job like anything else. And so seeing it and honoring it, wanting, and being a good teammate and a team player in that way and not despising it, work really hard not to despise publishing because it can, you can get jaded so quickly. And then just the final thing I think I would say that I have repeated for so many years is just, it's true that someone else has probably already said the thing you want to say. They've written it, they've said it, and they've probably said it better. Want, want. However, that doesn't mean you can't say it too, because there are just so many things that people need to hear so many times before they finally get it, before it finally makes sense. And we've all read books that are very similar to a book we read before, and that one didn't resonate, and this one does. So say it anyway, try not to despise the business, and keep doing your good work.
Amen. Let's wrap it up there. That's amazing. Thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you're a hungry author and you want to learn more about our community and courses, head over to hungryauthors.com. Remember, you have a story and a message worth sharing, and if you've got the hunger, you can make it happen.